Welcome back to Salon Cents and Dollars, the podcast. I'm Eddie, and I'm here with Christine, and we are going to touch all over the topic of leadership styles, because it is very important how you motivate your team, how they receive your leadership, and you can create the best culture for your business.
I mean, I definitely think it's a great topic after we talked about business identity, because identifying your business and what you want it to look like then dictates how you need to lead or what is best practices for being that leader. So this is definitely, I think, a little more tiered on, I think you and I are going to be biased and on the topic of kind of the employee-employer relationship and really focusing on that instead of the booth renter and landlord situation.
Yeah.
So what, you know, you were saying you identify two different leadership styles you see in our industry. And I think you described them so well. I think you should do it again.
Oh, I love this. So I was always taught and learned, you know, you can motivate people two ways. You can be the one that carries the whip, or you can be the one that dangles the carrot. And it very much hinges on the idea that there are some bosses in business, and then there are business leaders that take the reins and own the culture that they're responsible for. And there's two very different outcomes. There's two very different dynamics when you talk about the two types of leadership and what's allowed within a business. We are very much people leaders. We
try
want to cultivate a strong culture where people want to be, regardless of outside influences, I guess I could say.
I think when you were telling me about, you know, how you identified the two leadership styles, like so many different owners that have come in contact with over the years pop into mind for all the different ones. Like, I mean, I talk about being in workshops and owners being like, well, I have my payroll down to 35%. That's kind of what I think of as like the boss, because they're not really that aware of how other people feel about being paid 35% of services, and they probably have quite high turnover. You know, another example is I have people that come to the salon and work, and they're like, wow, you're here. And I'm like, what happened to your other people that you worked for? And they're like, not there. And, you know, I definitely, we've talked about before, like I had two locations. I was definitely like too much for me. So, you know, now that I have one, like they really can't get rid of me. And so I'm always surprised when I hear stories about owners that are kind of more hands off and they consider people employees. I'm pretty sure I went over the example of during COVID, like some of the people that were like, why did my employees not come back? Well, you didn't talk to them. So, and I think of leadership as, you know, I definitely told the story of me washing floors with a client making a comment.
Yeah.
You know, somebody that won't ask people to do things that they wouldn't do themselves, and that you engage and try. Like, we're not always going to be perfect as leaders. It's a learning curve on every realm. Like, I mean, I've been doing this. I was management before I got into the salon industry, as you were. So I can say I've pretty much been managing people since my late teens, which is way too many years for me to do math for right now. And it's always been, if I wouldn't do it, then I'm not never going to ask somebody. But I also probably have a really high bar of things that I won't do. Like, I fix toilets, I wash floors, I drill holes in tile to put up my beautiful new Comfort Zone shampoo holders. But I also will take out the trash or the cardboard, or, you know, hop in and help with a service. Don't say no to a client. So that's kind of the culture that I try and enhance in the business, but it doesn't always work. What do you think has worked well? Because you also believe in that, like, show not tell kind of leadership.
Yeah, modeling the behavior that you want to see out of your team. And the more that you model it, the more that they receive it and it will emulate it. Because in an ideal employee employee-based business, all right, service in particular, they're going to emulate what they see, and they're going to make it a point to make the leader's job easier because they can see how hard they work. And that brings everyone's game up at the same time. So you model that sense of urgency. You know, I love that expression. I learned it in football in high school. But, you know, to go through life and to go through the workplace with a sense of urgency for success is what you want to emulate, or what you want to model so that others will emulate it. And it's not an easy road, but it is rewarding when it comes back to you.
Yeah, we had a really great example is my nail team. Like, it got to be where all of a sudden they're like, I don't want to do more than 4 pedicures in a day. Fine, you can understand that. And then it got like worse and worse. Like, almost everyone was like, oh, this is bothering me. I can only do 2 pedicures today. And, you know, it got to where we couldn't actually do pedicures on clients because everybody's like, oh, I can't do it. And so it was making it really hard to book people in their area. And then I, being a licensed nail tech and having like one person out with ACL surgery and a few other things, I hopped in to help. And I would do a whole day of pedicure, 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 pedicure. And I have a good like 20 plus years on most of them. So the aches and pains, definitely, you know, you learn how to adjust your body and why not. Mm-hmm. And we have not heard peep in like 2 years about how many pedicures people do in a day. Because they know I could be in the middle of paperwork and we have a walk-in pedicure and I'll be like, okay,
yeah,
you got to do
it. And if you're in a situation like me, I'm not licensed and I can't do any actual, you know, regulated functions within our business. I'm going to do everything that I can to make sure that my team isn't stressed over like the extras. And so if I can't do service for the clients, then I'm going to serve someone who is. And so that means side work. You know, we do laundry in our business. And we do, I mean, that in itself is quite a chore, especially when you're running a spa and a salon. So as small as we are, it is a full-time chore. So to alleviate the team from that responsibility when I can't jump in and like blow dry or shampoo or, you know, different things like that, I'm going to do everything that I can in order to alleviate some stress so that it comes back to me whenever I do ask for those tasks to be done, it's met with enthusiasm instead of, I did, you know, like to your example, you know, I did 4 pedicures today, you know.
You're like, you're a nail tech. I'm a nail tech. That's what we do.
Yeah, that's how you get paid.
But you have to find a way to make things fun. Like if you're doing nails and you really don't like pedicures, you probably need to reassess what part of the industry you're in. But I'm not, you know, I'm older. My shoulders are a little like, and a few other things. So I do a lot of like the e-file pedicures, which are get off everything, but it's fun for me. So I don't mind doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's one of those things where I've always been a fan of like that whole idea. Like if I'm going to ask people to like get the shampoo back bar squared away, like I better be willing to do it myself. Or right. If I'm going to ask people to keep the color organized, like I'm going to be willing to hop in and maybe once in a while I'm the one doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely is something where you do have to understand your team, which I think as you get in business a little bit longer, you get tired. And like it's all fresh and new, you know, first few years. And then all of a sudden you're doing the same thing over mm-hmm. and over and over. And you have to remember that, like, yes, you've done this 50 times this week, but, you know, so is everybody else. And you need to keep doing that. So, like, even now, if something needs doing, you know, hop up and do it. Like, it's just the way of the world.
Yeah, finding that enthusiasm to do the repetitive tasks that that kind of grind us down in the daily. We used to make games, you know, in the restaurant. It seems kind of silly, but you know, you just find a way to get through the repetition and make it fun somehow. And that's, I think, a key indicator of a great leader is someone who can say, you know what, I know that this task can be a bit much if you're doing it 20 times a day, but how can we make it fun? And you get the team's involvement and you create a culture based on making the job as fun as possible.
What do you think is the grossest, worst thing you hate the most that you have done as a leader?
Definitely bathroom maintenance.
Yeah,
Definitely bathroom maintenance. From the
we had
restaurant,
a
I should say. There's like six stalls.
yeah, we had a part that was going, and I'll fix anything. And I finally was like, you know what? I think this is a little above my pay grade. I'm calling my dad, and my 80-year-old dad comes in and like stops at Home Depot and picks up the part. And I'm like, well, since you got the part for me, why don't you just I didn't have somebody else do it. I made my dad do it. But yeah, I mean, it's I think guests also appreciate in our industry when they see every level of people jumping in to help out. It makes them feel like we all want them there. I remember one of the things that was always talked about way, way back when you talked about like salons and how they were acting, like having every single person when they walk past a guest say hi and like engage and not just walk with their earbuds in and their head down and everything. And I think it's really hard since COVID to like keep that going because everyone has been so disconnected. It's still really hard to get people to plug back in. But it's important. Like, I'll be in the retail area and someone will come in and ask questions. And I'll just talk to them and find out what they need and all those things that we've always done in service and retail. And they're like, oh, wow, like I didn't realize you knew them. And I'm like, I didn't. I just met them when they came in, but that's my job. Because, we wouldn't, you want to always treat your guests and your employees as if they matter, first of all. And if I would ask, if I would do something for my best friend in the salon, like my best friend comes in and I'd be like, this is what you should be getting done for services. This is what you should get for product when you go home. Then that's the same thing you should do for your guests. Or as an owner, if you come in and you would talk to a guest a certain way, like you shouldn't have it so that the way that you talk to your team is less than how you would talk to a guest. So you want to have that consistency,
I have a
which
great
is a
story.
struggle.
Oh, it is. And I have a great story. And I always refer back to this when I think about like the ideal leader. I was working in the restaurant and I was in South Florida, Fort Myers, and I was a part of a new restaurant opening. It's a big production. So once construction gets done, they bring in team members, trainers, everyone that they can get to begin setting up the restaurant. And that involves opening up smallwares and utensils,
Okay.
and you get trash cans. And what they do is they drop a semi-trailer on the site,
That sounds fun.
and then the truck leaves. Yeah, it's like 13 or 14 pallets that are like 6 or 7 feet tall, just packed with stuff, and I mean packed. So you just think about, the dish racks that everything goes on, that stuff is coming in on pallets, you need that stuff. And our director of operations at the time, so consider regional management, he's over 10 locations all throughout South Florida. Super nice guy. His attire is Oxford with a tie, dress slacks, dress
Does
shoes.
he have French cuffs? Because those,
Oh
I
yeah,
miss those.
he is a stylish man, and I'll never forget this impression that he left on me. But I was transferring from another location to train at this opening as well as be a team member once everything was settled. And I was also part of the opening team. So I was there for that delivery. And I remember our director of operations, Shane Brooks, he climbs into this back of the semi-trailer, climbs over these pallets, like three or four, within the semi-trailer, just to get trash cans that are going to be needed first, dish racks that were going to be needed first. And he's just pitching them out over top of the pallets. And he's like, here, we're going to need this, and we're going to need
With the
this.
tie and the
Oh
Oxford
yeah,
shirt.
the whole get up.
Didn't even loosen the tie, huh?
No, he was a no-limit soldier. He was in it. And that just really stuck out to me. In his position, the money that he made, the power that he held within the company, and he was the first one to climb into the back of that hot semi truck in the middle of Southwest Florida summer, just so we could get the things that we needed, instead of saying, hey, why don't you climb over those pallets and let's get the dish racks and trash cans out. He was the one that leapt over the pallets to get to that stuff. And for all of his other personality traits, you know, as a leader, that was the part of him that stuck out the most and made me respect him the most and want to follow him within my career, within the company. And you don't know the impact that you have on others when you are an effective leader like that, setting the example, setting the tone, and being the model for others to emulate. And I'll take this opportunity and apologize to you, because it was instilled in me a long time ago, don't start a conversation without a greeting. And this morning I was rapid
firing
questions.
Oh, I do that all the time. That's why I was like,
Christine.
Oh, that's totally me.
Yeah, I was rapid firing questions to Christine, and she answered, of course, you know, you're so gracious. And at the end of it, you know, I was like, okay, cool, I got my answer. And then I was like, wait a second.
Wait, I think I actually said, I do that too.
Yeah, you did.
Before
you
said, even said anything.
I was like, oh, anyway, good morning. And
I have to do, like, I do the same thing. Like, I'm trying to be better and I start firing off stuff to people. I at least try and wait till a specific time.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, oh, also, hi. Like, I don't know what else
it's
to
like,
say.
It's an afterthought. But yeah. You know, we get so caught up in the moment. And, you know, as leaders, it's easy to do that.
Yeah.
And I want to apologize to you, because you are not just a source of information or resource. I hold you in high regard.
I don't mind.
So I do apologize.
But
so that
I
is just
that
an example.
Also, that's a great example, though, because I think that's where, when we're supposed to be in a position of leadership, and I think one of the biggest mistakes that we make sometimes is being so much in our head that we forget that we have other opportunities to grow that have nothing to do with the daily grind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's actually one of my biggest flaws, is sometimes I'm so focused on what needs to be done that I'm not like aware, and I have to like be a little more conscientious of that as a person. And that is one of the spots I feel like I have tried to grow the most, because it is hard. And I think that's where, you know, people will start thinking, oh, well, she cares, but she's definitely like robotic, because it's like work, 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 work.
Right.
But that's how I was raised. So
It's at the front of mind. Yeah. When
what?
You put, it's at the front of mind instead of, you know, the other intangibles. Yeah. I was instilled that, and it was kind of a funny, you know, a funny story for me. When I was still just an hourly team member at the restaurant, we had a new managing partner come in. It was a woman, and she's super, super high energy, high fives, loved it. First couple months goes by, and then she's like, all right, now things are going to start to get real. I run a tight ship. This is what it's going to look like, but I will not overlook you as a person. And if I approached her, if anyone approached her, without a greeting first, she was like, all right, hang on, listen, you want to try that again? And then it trained all
I need
of
that
us.
Person in my life.
Yeah, it trained all of us to be like, oh yeah, absolutely. Good morning, Michelle. Yeah. It's so nice to see you. How is everything? And then, you know, 30 seconds connection with your people, and then you move on. You say, okay, well, I had a question, or I had an issue. Can you help me with it? Or I've got a suggestion. And so then you dive into the topic at hand. But, you know, that greeting for her was a part of the connection that she had with her people. And it set her apart from other mentors and bosses, you know, leaders that I had worked for. She ran a tight ship. She had high expectations, but she also made it a point to hold herself to a higher standard when it came to the relationships and putting those first.
Right. Well, now I'm going to talk about someone that I worked for. I mean, I can bring up people from my past life when I was in finance, but in this industry, I went and got the way that I kind of got involved in this industry was I used to get my nails done when I went to Northeastern at this place in Kenmore Square. Rhonda. Rondi, it was called, but Rhonda was the owner, and her husband Giacomo had the salon downstairs. And so I was in there getting my nails done all the time, and went and got my hair done there, and which is a whole other story. And then when I went and I changed industries and I went back to doing nails after, you know, many years or whatever, and skin, I called them and I'm like, I want to work for you guys. And so at the time, it's probably about a month or two that they were still in the location that I had remembered, but the Commonwealth Hotel in Kenmore Square had bought all the property and they were moving everybody across the street into new spaces. So Giacomo and Rondi became one business. Giacomo was the type of stylist that back in the 70s and 80s, there was a line out the door to make appointments with him, not even for services, just to make appointments. He was one of like, he was like a celebrity-ish person, as much as we don't have them in Boston, but he was as close to one as possible. But as time went on, by the time I met him, he was much older. So he did like a few days of clients, but that man left such an impression on me, that he would be in the closets, like reorganizing and like kind of gutting trash and like, because we accumulate things in our industry, especially nails. Like, and I'll own that one too, because we want all the glitter, all the products, all the nail tips, all this. And it builds up. So, like, he would go through and start cleaning, and I would hop in and help him. And he'd be like, so thankful that I would help him. And then when it came to dealing with other salons in the area, now this is like other level leader to me. If it was a salon that was literally like next door or down the street a little bit, and someone came in and applied, he would call the owner and say, listen, you know, your employee came over here. And if you want to keep them, I wanted to give you that opportunity to talk to them without, you know, you being blindsided. And he wouldn't take employees from a certain radius around. And the fact that he was that much of a leader and had that much strength of conviction in who he was, and like partnering with the different businesses in the area and networking with the other salons in the area. And then always like he was like in his own head, like nobody I've ever met. But when you connected with him, when you were helping doing something with him, he would really like just be so humble and grateful and thankful that you were there with him. And this, like I said, this man back, I want to say, so in Boston, which arguably has high costs, but back in 2000, he was charging almost $100 for a haircut and you couldn't get an appointment. And, you know, was he that great as a stylist? He was fine. He was good. Like, but as a person and as a leader and all of those things, he was spectacular. And so he always left a really great impression on me. And I always emulated that networking and trying to respect the salons in the area because of him, which I always hold dear to my heart.
Yeah, that's a great example of just how you can positively impact your community and industry by changing that little bit. I know that, today's a day and age, you get an applicant, you're like, all right, but there is still the question of where they're coming from. Is this the right move for them? Is it the right fit for them? Because obviously they've been at their other salon or other business, for however long, and they have a relationship with that employer. And how would that feel if, one of my team members were putting out feelers?
I mean, I know, like, we know, like, stylists are always going to be looking for what else is out there. It's just part of it. Most of the time, like, my team is like, yeah, so I got mad at you for a little while. So I was looking for something. And then I realized nothing is like here, you
Yeah.
know? And that's a good thing sometimes. But there's also the time when somebody doesn't have the confidence to speak up and maybe we didn't know something was wrong. And to have somebody reach out and say, hey, listen, like, this person, you know, came in. This is what they said was upset. It's such a small thing. I wanted to let you know. Like, I just thought that was so, like, other level classy. And me being a British Bostonian, I love classy. So it made me happy. I mean, and it's like I look back in my finance days and people worked so aggressively and so hard. Like, you had people that had like arteries like bursting from stress and like all sorts of like health issues. And part of it was like they never connected with anybody. They just kind of did their jobs and barked out rules or what they needed done, or like nobody checked in. Like, and I'm not saying like I was never like somebody who needed hand holding, but like health-wise and kind of emotional-wise and physical-wise, that connection as a leader, so that you feel supported and that you're supporting others, does so much for your well-being. Because if you're just like barking out things, like, listen, I try and jump in wherever I can. I try and help. I make sure that if there's something that's needed, I'm throwing a text to a rep or whatever. I try and do everything that I can. And even then, like some days I'm like, why does nobody wants to work here? Like, why do they work here? I feel like everyone hates being here. And then like someone will bitch slap me a little bit, and then I'll be like, okay, great. Yep, nope, I'm over it now. But and I'm saying this as somebody who has had employees that are there 19 years right now, 20 years right now, and I still like, am I doing enough for them? Am I connecting enough for them? You know, I actually have like physical pain right now because we've talked about the pay structures a little bit and how, you know, I put everyone on salary way back in the day because I wanted to make sure everyone was protected and that they were safe during like economy crashes and stuff that we had in the past. But then like now that people are starting to switch over to commission and they're connecting with their guests better and like their income has grown on average 56% between everybody within a month. And they're taking home so much more money and they're so much happier. And I'm like, I made people unhappy. My choice
That
made
hits on
people
the
make less money, which
point.
made me really upset.
And that just shows that you care, and it doesn't take away from the reasons or intentions as to why you did it.
So I think we need to wrap up though, because we're kind of getting to our 30 minutes that we try and give ourselves.
But that
But
kind of okay, so that kind of hints on like the anguish that you can feel emotionally. And just to wrap it up, so what's the reward for choosing one type of leadership over the other? And we talked about this briefly, like to be just as simply a boss and to have that like your needs first mentality when it comes to approaching leadership of, you know, let's use the technical term, direct reports, you know, the people that you're
Ooh,
responsible
that was a
for.
real boss phrase.
No, so if you have direct reports and you are a boss, you know, within your business, you're not modeling the example. There is, you know, emotional anguish that comes down the road when you think about the lives that you've impacted, whether good or bad. And I say anguish, you know, for the bad part of it. And so there's a lot of reward in just doing it the right way and having that positive impact in the lives of the people that you're responsible for. You know, to hire somebody on, you're making a commitment to them as well as your business that you're going to invest in them and you're going to build a relationship where they want to stay. It's fiscally irresponsible to create an environment where people don't want to stay. You are putting money into their training. You are making a promise to them. You're doing all the
Absolutely.
things when you hire somebody on, and it is a cost to your business. And if you are set up in your leadership style to fail, it is going to cost you money in the long run, and it is going to negatively impact your business as far as culture is concerned and a reputation in your community.
I would agree completely. Anyway, that was a very good wrap up. I feel like this is definitely your topic. So,
I'm
what is
passionate
we
about
were
it.
doing something else next, which I feel like it was my topic.
Well,
So check in next
we'll hit on
time.
that. Yeah, the next time.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Look forward to seeing you again.
Bye, everyone.